Welcome to On Course, the teaching ministry of Pastor Hart Ramsey, where we offer simple biblical insight into some of life's most pressing issues.
What if I told you that a lot of the pain and difficulty and adversity you're experiencing is simply God aligning your now so you could be prepared for your tomorrow?
Prepare for the next few minutes to be encouraged, enlightened, and inspired. Let's join Pastor Ramsey and get on course. What's going on, good people? And welcome to another edition of On Course with Hart Ramsey. Of course, we call these sessions Heart to Heart. It's where you get to hear from the heart of God by way of the man of God. And of course, that's Pastor Hart Ramsey. I'm Gerard Bonner from All Things Bonnerfied Media. And of course, there's a lot to get into. So welcome aboard, Pastor Hart. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How you doing, man?
Man, I am doing great. Let me first say thank you to all of you guys who have really, really been listening in big, big numbers. We appreciate this because obviously if we do all this talking and there's nobody out there listening, it's kind of pointless. So thank you guys for engaging with the podcast. We got another big one for you today because, you know, there's a saying that it happens in threes. Now, I don't know why people say that, but it seems like every time they say it, it happens. And so recently, there were three major moves in sports all around the element of football. And before I get to those, I want to mention something. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but everybody knows you, of course, on your social media posts for obviously posting incredible wisdom, which you've been doing since Twitter was hot, you know, a decade or so ago. But you're going to post about that, but you're also going to post about sports.
Yes.
Particularly the Alabama Crimson Tide. So before I get into that, I want to talk about, first of all, the importance of having other things to post about besides church. How valuable is it having an outlet to talk about sports and the other things that you love?
Well, you know, first of all, the people who believe that because you're a man of God or because you're in ministry, that all you should talk about is scripture and the Bible and God and the unseen realm and demons and, you know, Calvary, but really, the Bible says that God gives us richly all things to enjoy. Yes. And one of the things I enjoy a lot is sports. Matter of fact, before I knew the Lord, I knew sports. Uh-huh. And I learned a lot about life through sports. It was one of my first outlets. And so I played, just from background, I played multiple sports.
Ah.
But my father, knowing that I was more cerebral, mm-hmm. I was more of a thinker than I was a physical type person, he didn't want me to become too connected to sports because he knew that I would either be a doctor, a lawyer, or a preacher. He kept saying that.
Wow.
So I played cornerback. Okay. I played football. I played cornerback for years, both and a flag. I actually played in the military league overseas in Germany, played on championship teams, went to Vicenza, Italy to play in tournaments. So I was that guy.
Wow.
I was also a baller. I played basketball for a while. And my worst sport was baseball, but I played baseball too. I was a first baseman, believe it or not.
What?
Yes. So
the things we learn on the podcast.
So when I first came to Alabama, of course, being from the Virgin Islands, moving to Miami, I was a big Hurricanes fan.
Sure.
But being, you know, when you live among people, you minister to them and you become family with them. I fell in love with the discipline and the culture of the Alabama Crimson Tide. And I want to speak to that from a spiritual standpoint.
Sure.
So what I love about this team was, first of all, in Alabama, we don't have professional teams.
Right.
Think about it. We have no professional basketball teams. There were no professional football teams, baseball teams, what have you. So football, high school football, college football is like huge.
Yeah, yeah.
You get into brawls down here over teams. Sure. I mean, the Alabama-Auburn rivalry is no joke. As a matter of fact, at first I used to laugh about it until I realized they're not playing.
They're not. They're very, very serious.
So posting about sports for me is a different expression of who I am. It gives me a chance to be a person, and to kind of like be, you know, we're not spirits. We have bodies. We could, you know, we live in this physical world, and there's some things that we have to touch, things that appeal to us, things that we could express ourselves through besides our spiritual talk.
Yes.
So that's the extended explanation.
No, that's great. And I think people learned an awful lot about why sports ends up being so passionate. I mean, you were obviously involved in athletics, so it makes an awful lot of sense. So I thought about you when the piece of news flashed across my phone that Nick Saban would no longer be part of the Alabama Crimson Tide. He was retiring. Yeah. And you were literally the first person I thought about when I saw that. So let me start by asking, how did you feel when you got that news? Because it came as a shock to me.
Well, first of all, Alabama fans, me personally, I am a part of the Crimson Tide family. You know, my twin daughters graduated from Alabama. Uh-huh. And so it was not only was a shocker, we were still recovering from losing the game to Michigan. You know, it was because our team started out horrible. We did not expect to be in the top 10.
Okay.
And we kept seeing the improvement. And when we beat Auburn in that crazy game. And then the next game, we handled Georgia, and we didn't think we played our best game.
Wow.
So we beat Georgia, and okay, man, if we just play our game, we'll win it all. So when Michigan beat us, we were kind of like low. And then the very next week, he announces his retirement, and we're like, oh my God. Right. So needless to say, I was terribly shocked and hurt and grieving. I think I'm still grieving.
Fair enough. Fair. Yes. And understandably so. He's been kind of an institution there.
Yeah. And you know, I think with him, what we were always, we were never concerned about who was playing on the team. Mm. And this preaches to, and it speaks to his leadership.
Yeah.
Never concerned about who the players were. We were concerned for two things. Number one, well, actually three things. Number one, he recruited them. That means they had to work something. Number two, he coached them. That means they had to get better. And number three, he was going to pick the best players to play in the game without respect of persons.
Right. Right.
So it was always about him. He was the central figure, the coach. Listen, he would get on the coaches. He'd get on the players. Yeah. He would get on the media. You know, we had some situations of during the Trump era where the big race, you know, racial things were happening. And he was very vocal.
Wow.
His black players and his black coaches. So he's not only an institution, he was like a father in the sports community. And the culture here in Alabama at large. So, and I say here, I'm sitting from Georgia talking to you about here in Alabama. So,
yeah,
those of you who are from Atlanta and surrounding areas, forgive me. I'm speaking just, you know, I'm speaking as a native Alabamian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And fair enough. So obviously that was a big blow. And then we hear Pete Carroll, who was the winningest coach in Seattle Seahawks history, led them to their only Super Bowl championship. He was released, and Bill Belichick, who won the Patriots 6 Super Bowls, an institution there, he's gone.
Right.
So what is going on? Now, I know, and those who follow sports, you know, after the regular season is over, there's usually the chopping block that happens for teams who were not winning. But usually names like those are names that are usually never in jeopardy because they are institutions. We know they can have a bad season. They'll come back. Right. What do you think is going on?
So before these guys were big names, there were the Roger Staubach, but Tom Landry for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes.
There was, what's his name? Bear Bryant was Alabama's famous coach.
Right.
Known for the houndstooth hat. And that was another era of coaches that actually influenced the coaches that we were grown accustomed to.
Sure.
And they became legends in institutions. And now it's these coaches are on their way out, and another batch of would-be legends in institutions are coming in, and they're going to look to the Nick Sabans and to the Pete Carrolls and the Bill Belichicks, and they're actually students and proteges and mentees of these leaders. And so what we're seeing is the end of eras.
Mm.
And so what's interesting in our lifetimes is that many people don't get to see this, but we're seeing, I said this during the pandemic, Jesus talked about even until the end of the world, the word world there is eras, talking about not the world as a cosmos, but the eras, a time,
right,
a time frame, the end of what do you call this thing? A season.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're seeing now is a new batch of people coming in, but it's not just in sports. It's all around. The leaders who are known and who have made their marks are now on their way out, and what's coming is a new school, a new group. Yeah. Some of us are going to survive of this season of chopping, because this is the, for example, people don't know this. Like I'm a Gen Xer, right? Mm-hmm. But when you look at my birth year, I'm actually the last year of the baby boom.
Oh wow!
The baby boom generation supposedly ended in 61.
Okay.
Gen X started in 62, or actually they're saying Gen X started maybe 64, 65, but the different schools of thought as to when Gen X started. I was raised by boomers as a Gen Xer.
Okay.
So Gen X is really, the baby boomers are like in the nursing homes and all this, and the Gen Xers are on their way out. Mm. So what we're seeing is the last of the boomers leaving, and a new era is coming in. The younger boomers or the older Xers are now the fathers and the mothers, and we are the aunts and unks,
right.
Aunties and unks, and we're on our way out. And so it's kind of a season for us. For me, I'm watching it and learning about exits and transitions and pivoting and retiring. What does that mean? Some professions don't allow for retirement.
Right.
I think what it allows for is expansion of leadership, where you welcome in younger guys and you train them all the way to the end, till your end, whatever that looks like, your inability to function or to carry on any longer.
Right.
Nick Saban said that he still loved what he was doing, mm-hmm. but he no longer had the capacity to keep the rigorous schedule that he needed to be on the level that he was. That what made him above the rest was the extra time and effort that he put in, 14-hour days, started preparing at 2 in the morning, mm-hmm. Leaving in the house at 4 in the morning. It was no longer, it was not no longer something he could do. So I think that's what we're seeing, is that the older guys are given the same effort, but it's not enough, or they're given an effort at that age level and it's not enough. The things are harder and faster, and it's time to step back and let someone else do it.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because as you were saying that, it made me think there was a post I saw sometime last week, and I don't remember the pastor's name, but I do know that it was Pastor Andy Stanley that posted it. And it was of a pastor, again, I don't remember his name or the name of his church, but he was standing in his pulpit ultimately to retire.
Yes.
And he explained, and he literally almost used those exact words that, I don't read as well. I can't remember names as well. I cannot do this function at the level that I did however many years ago he started. Right. And there was an interesting, I had a conversation with a couple of pastor friends, and one of the things that they said, which I just found to be so interesting and yet kind of true, this particular pastor was a Caucasian pastor. Yep. And of course, you mentioned Nick Saban. And in African-American contexts, we don't tend to see pastors transition out of that role as gracefully.
Right.
Let me ask the question, why is that? That we don't tend to see that happen in African-American culture?
I think it's a multitude of reasons. First, there is the idea of a transition plan. I'm going to talk about a transition plan in a minute. But also, it's most white pastors who are set up in a organized situation have a retirement funding plan. And I think I found a number one reason that black pastors don't retire or transition well is because they have no way to sustain themselves when they leave.
Wow.
Like for example, look at John Maxwell, mm-hmm. who is a pastor, transitioned out of pastoring. Now he's a life coach on the highest level. He gained his wealth. I dare say this if I'm wrong, but I think he gained his wealth through his life coach, John Maxwell, his speaking, his books and all that.
Right.
After he transitioned out of pastoral ministry, churches still invited him in. It's not like that with black pastors. Mostly a black pastor is going to be committed to his one congregation. He has no national platform, usually. He has no other means of income. When he transitions out, the church is going to give him a stipend if they could afford it. And then normally when the successor comes in, he has not an honor system or something set up to venerate or to honor the person that went out. They're going forth like nothing happened before them. They were honored. It's interesting. They were honored that Freedom Life Baptist Church is now 110 years old.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
On the age of the church, but not the service of the person that came before. Wow. And then I want to circle back to the transition plan. Transition plans are crucial in that they have to be, I believe, from my own personal experience, and I wish I could share some personal insight. I have a lot of personal insight, but I'm going to share it one day, but not okay. today.
Yeah.
About transitioning a work without the proper stipulations in place. For example, the outgoing person, especially if you're the founder, especially if you're the caretaker of whatever the organization is, it is your responsibility, number one, to find the right candidate, number two, to have the right plan in place, number three, to make sure that there's responsibility for the culture. Mm. For example, I don't know if you know this about Nick Saban coming, Nick Saban's replacement coming in, but one of the things that the replacement did was he has an open door for Nick Saban. So Nick Saban has carte blanche. He can walk in and he has free access to all the facilities. The guys like Nick Saban can call me wow. and say, hey, this is what I think. Because in order to transition properly, when I was in the military, the idea of transition was because we want to keep the fighting force cohesive. When we transition leaders, there cannot be a disruption. That means the culture of the unit, the culture of the fighting force takes precedent over the leadership style of the leader.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Right. Wow. So even if the leader comes in and the leader says, well, I don't lead like Nick Saban. It's wonderful you don't lead like Nick Saban. Nick Saban did not lead like Bear Bryant. But Alabama has a winning culture.
Right.
Culture comes first. The needs of the fan base comes first. I'm gonna segue my style in, right? We're gonna flip the whole switch and everything is gone. I cannot do that. Right. Alabama is in the toughest, one of the toughest conferences, the Southeast Conference.
Yes.
Number two is we're one of the staple names or teams in that conference. Mm-hmm. Number two, we built that by recruiting off of farms and hoods. And you see what I'm saying? Right. So this coach can't come from the Northwest and say, well, we don't do it like that in the Northwest. That's not our way. He has to come in, he has to learn the way, and then he has to segue his leadership style into keep the fighting force or the team constant. So to your point about the retirement of a pastor, I don't think we're educated enough in transition. There's a high level of ignorance because most black leaders we fall into leadership and then we are revered for our style of leadership. We weren't trained into it.
Right.
What's the template for Dr. Martin Luther King? What's the template for him? He didn't go through, so he didn't matriculate through some black leadership school. He came out of nowhere. As a matter of fact, he didn't make good grades in school. He was a low B, high C student. So there's no pattern. Our leaders emerge out of need. From necessity comes a leader. And he begins to lead and we follow him. And when he's killed or when he dies or when he falls, whatever happens, we don't have to replicate that.
More of our heart-to-heart conversation is on the way. Stay tuned. Imagine being filled with a peace so deep that the world around you can't touch it. Pastor Hart Ramsey is on a mission to help believers understand what it means to have a healthy prayer-based relationship with God. He's doing that through his book, Seeking Answers, Finding Rest Through Prayer. In this book, you'll learn how to ensure your relationship with God is based on a new and improved covenant, which dangerous prayer habits to avoid, and what to do when prayer doesn't yield the answers you want. It's time to trust God enough to make your prayer life truly about Him. Pick up your copy of Seeking Answers, Finding Rest Through Prayer from Hart Ramsey today. Available now on Amazon, iTunes, and wherever books are sold. Do you love this podcast? There are several ways you can show it. You can share your love for this podcast on the socials and use the hashtag OnCourseHartRamsey or Heart to Heart. That's H-A-R-T, the number 2, H-E-A-R-T. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and now you can find us on Spotify. So if you rock with Spotify, It's an easy way to access us. Search for On Course with Hart Ramsey and subscribe. Thank you so much for your continued support, and keep listening to On Course with Hart Ramsey.
Why, yeah.
Have you subscribed to Hart Ramsey's Uplift? It's his national text message service where daily you can hear from the heart of God by way of the man of God, Pastor Hart Ramsey. To receive this daily encouragement, text the word UPLIFT to the number 334-310-4278. Again, text the word UPLIFT to the number 334-310-4278. Uplift your spirit, encourage your heart, and empower your walk. Subscribe today to Hart Ramsey's UPLIFT. Stay connected with Pastor Hart Ramsey on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Hart Ramsey. Let's go back into today's Heart to Heart conversation featuring Pastor Hart Ramsey. It's true. It's true. And I think it is also indicative of what, and people hate talking about this, but it is also indicative of what has happened culturally in terms of our Caucasian brothers and sisters versus our people of color. Yeah. Meaning when you come from a household or a culture that is accustomed to retirement plans, it's accustomed to stocks and bonds, when it's accustomed to, you know, generational transfers and things of that nature, you're operating and a start place differently than people who have just survived to get here.
Yeah.
You know, you're operating differently. And you said something that I know is so powerful, that many of the leaders in Black churches are there out of necessity, not because they were trained to be. And I'll go so far as to say, some of them just happen to be the next preacher in line, not the best leader.
And that's the difference.
Huge difference.
So for us, for the Black community at large, we tend to gravitate toward leaders who express well.
Right.
Who articulate well, who are charismatic in this, right? And so we, in our expression, those people tend to get the best results. But then again, how do we find another one of those? Because normally the people who gravitate to you don't gravitate to you because you can do it. Matter of fact, I will say this, in the Black community, if someone can do what you do, they tend to become your rival.
Truth.
So not, they don't become your student.
Right.
So your students can't do what you do. They're taken by what you do, but most of them can't do it. And so for me, as a person who understand that we cannot stop the aging process, Father Time is undefeated.
Undefeated. Okay?
He takes different routes, but he's going to get you sooner or later. So what I'm doing is I am at this point in my life searching out the best minds, the best hearts. It takes a certain man to become a certain kind of leader. I'm not looking for the narcissistic, super gifted, I, me, my mind, follow me, look at me. God makes God vomit. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for the humble guys. I'm looking for, you could be introvert, extrovert, I don't care, or a mixture of both. I'm looking for people who could carry the weight of leading people in a way that helps them and not hurt them. Now, understanding that every man has to work out his own situation. I think the scriptures say, work out your own soul salvation. Right. You have to work out your own issues and faults and flaws and foibles and fumbles. You have to work this thing out while you're leading people. Mm-hmm. That delicate balance, you have to find that in a person. He has to be honest, or she has to be honest. They got to be passionate. They got to be studied. They got to some degree be articulate or able to express themselves. So as an older leader, having walked through the corridor, so to speak, of leadership, I know what I'm looking for in leaders. And then even in that, Gerard, there's someone that will be lost in the crowd. They're going to emerge out of nowhere. We didn't see them coming. You know how it is.
Totally.
Like the guy that stepped in for Nick Saban now, 4 years ago, he was an offensive coordinator at Indiana. Unheard of. He won, they said he won a bunch of games, right? But 67 of those games that he won with some team in Sioux Falls, Dakota. Mm. I mean,
who, wow.
In a league called the NAIA or the
yes.
NIA.
Yeah. I never heard of it. But they are not Division I at all.
Not, but that's why yeah. he won most of his games.
That's incredible.
You take his record, his record is only 37-9 in Division I.
Wow.
Right? But he came out of nowhere. He has a winning tradition. And I think that's what's going to happen when you look at churches and businesses or whatever. You need people, for those of us who are at, we're headed towards the latter end of our leadership. We have to know to find the next leaders, the next new voices. And I want to add one more thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of older leaders hold on long because they're not finished. They were late bloomers.
Mm.
So we have to speak to the late bloomer. What happens to the Abrahams and the Moseses, yeah. who God did not tap you on your shoulder or call you till you're 75 or 80 years old?
Wow.
That's when people should be finishing. For those of you who are listening to me and you are the person that God did not open the door for you or call your number, he had you being faithful for all these years, and then when your number finally came, you were older. What do you do? Are you to be disobedient now because you're older, you got started later? Is your excuse, I need to get out of the way for the younger generation? You got to obey God.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that there is the necessity of having this transition plan and a transition mindset and knowing how to step aside for the next generation, and not just step aside, but step into something else. Because as long as you have life, you have an obligation to fulfill purpose in some way. As long as you have life, there's purpose, because it's too easy for us to not be in the earth. It's all it takes is you could breathe your last breath or experience your last heartbeat. God can get us out of here when we're finished. So you have right. purpose. That's a lot. I know
it's a lot, and there's a lot to unpack there, because there are multiple groups of people that are impacted by this. There is the transitioning leader, and I don't necessarily want to call them outgoing, because I believe, like you said, you're transitioning from one assignment being finished to a new assignment.
Yeah.
Then there is whoever it is that's coming as the successor, but where do you find that successor? You know right. what I mean? So there's a lot, and I hope people are grabbing this, because there's a lot of really, really good nuggets in here. So let's talk to the person who is transitioning out, because the transitioning out is that infamous pivot that a lot of people were using as a buzzword in 2020, that is still happening, and it's happening across the board. You know, most people, if you don't know, I'm involved in wrestling, we can say that. And one of the big changes that happened last year was Vince McMahon moving out of that spot that he had been so widely known for. So this kind of transition is happening everywhere. You know, it's not just the church and not just sports, it's everywhere. So let's first talk to that person who may be feeling like it's time to switch, it's time to transition, but they don't know what to yet. They yeah. don't know how to yet. What can we tell them to encourage them, A, to transition, and B, not to hold on yeah. when it's time to let go?
Well, I think people transition for different reasons. And one of the things that they have to be clear about is the why of the transition. Mm. So sometimes it's a calling. You feel like, for example, you feel a calling to something else. You just feel like you don't want to leave this, but you feel like your heart is more there than it is here. That's one thing that has to be considered. The second thing is when you realize that you're not as effective in the space you're in as you were before. And although people honor you, your lack of effectiveness is no longer acceptable to you. In other words, your standard has not changed, your capacity or your ability has diminished. Now we have to talk about what we're gonna do.
Right.
For that particular person, my heart goes out, because you're being called to something. You have been forced to give up something because of diminishing capacity. Yeah. And the harder you try, you may be getting diminishing returns. I believe in a situation like that, if you're a praying person, which I pray you are, you begin to ask God, what's next?
Right.
And then, of course, as you get older, it's like emptiness syndrome. You start to, there's some things you need to downsize. You don't need the big house anymore. You don't need the big car, the larger car. I think you have to force yourself to envision a future where you're not always working, where you see more value in yourself than what you do.
Yeah.
Value, we all get a certain amount of value from our work and what we do, but you have to get to the place where you say, I am me. For example, I'm Dr. Hart Ramsey. That's what I, that's who I am. What I do is I pastor, I teach, I lead leaders, right? I love music. Mm-hmm. I follow sports. I mean, so my income, when I transition, may take a hit to some degree. Mm-hmm. So I have to find a way to supplement income to continue to maintain some type of lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. So I have that. Is it going to be work? Is it going to be something that I do as a consultant? What, you know, you have to figure those things out. Right. So it's going to take some prayer. It's going to take some planning. But at the same time, I think it's horrible if you have to hold on because that's the only income you have.
Yeah.
Because now you're underperforming, and that becomes a robbery to someone who's expecting you to perform at a certain level so they could benefit. There's a lot involved in that. Yeah. And so, I think that as a leader, you have to, I think I told my team, my leadership team at NCC 15 years before. So we're talking about in 2005, mm-hmm. I gathered my leaders and I said to them, this team has 15 years left.
Wow. Wow.
They're like, someone said, that's not faith. I ignored them. I kept telling them, I sensed it in my heart. We have 15 years left on this track. Mm-hmm. And one by one, as the time passed, some would fizzle, some would retire, some would get hurt, a couple died. Mm. And at the 15-year mark, the pandemic hit.
Jeez.
See how that works?
Yeah.
So and a lot of things happened in between that time, but I got a sense. And I think as a prophetic people, as a praying people, as a believing people, as a people that's connected to God, and I, of course we segue all the way to the spiritual things, you have to have a sense, not just of what are you being called away from, but what are you being called to? It has to be, just like you're called to what you're doing now, you have to be called to something else. Right now I feel a strong call to still pastor, but to mentor leaders, to make sure that leaders and pastors, we're working hard and heavy to start, we have the Edge Leadership Network. I want to have the Edge Leadership Institute. What I want to do is bring pastors in, leaders in, and teach them how to not just lead, but how to govern.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? How to govern, because government does not just include me leading people, it includes me leading myself as well.
Yes.
Government deals with families. Government deals with stewarding businesses. Mm-hmm. And so as we look at, again, circling back around to like the Nick Saban situation, I honor him. People can always be heartbroken when you leave, because after a while of leading well, you become synonymous with the institution.
Yes.
Become synonymous with the success, correct?
Yeah.
And so you have to transition out in a way and tell the people, I'm not going anywhere, I'm here.
Right.
Right? And you stay as long, and you present, and you'll be around as in a limited capacity as long as it takes for the people to appreciate the new leadership they have, and to see that this new leadership has shoulders as well.
Yes.
And a new identity is being formed. Mm-hmm. One of the worst things, hear me on this, one of the worst things you can do is to come into a situation and snatch the identity of the organization, or snatch the identity of the church or the business or the community. If you're a step parent and you're coming into the family, to snatch the identity of the family because you have this need to feel like you're in charge. That is immaturity. It is entitlement, and it's going to wreck some stuff.
Wow.
So because of the way this new coach came in with Saban, he's going to get grace for honoring Saban going out, for allowing Saban access. He's going to get grace. If he doesn't win in the first and second year, he's going to have some grace. Now, in Alabama, if you don't win by the third year, we're kicking you out. I don't care who endorses you. So there's that.
For sure, for sure. So now let's talk to the people that'll end up coming into these spots. You know, there's all kinds of things that are happening. There are some that feel like they could be front runners for certain spots. There are others that have felt like they've been overlooked. You know, as you mentioned, the gentleman that was in Indiana, kind of finding him as a needle in a haystack. What do you say to people who they see these transitions happening and they're wondering, will this be my turn? What do you say to them and how they could potentially prepare for what their future could look like?
Well, the first thing is no one should expect to be chosen if they weren't preparing.
Mm-hmm.
Preparation time, you've heard me say this before. Preparation time should never be spent pretending.
So good.
So I always take issue with people who feel that they should have been chosen when they spent a lot of time in the limelight with the leader, but never getting better.
Wow.
A part of being the leader is being able to tell the truth about the capacity and the abilities and the quotient of the people around you, yeah. The acumen, so to speak. And so if you are a person and you're waiting your turn, number one, I think it should be in some type of way communicated, and has to be, I don't like subtle and I don't like aggressive, but in some way you have to let someone know that at some point, you know, you want to be considered.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and I think people, you do that by your service initially.
Mm, that's good.
Okay. You do it with your service. You say, I want to be considered. You be faithful. You work hard, whatever. And then whenever the opportunity comes to relieve the leader of some of the burden, you do it. Mm-hmm. You do it well. Yeah. And then you be faithful. What I mean by that is you can always have some little person come to you and say, man, you know what? You're really good. You're actually better than the, you be faithful. You say, no, I serve. I'm a representative. I represent him. I serve him. That loyalty gets back to the leader, and it says you can be trusted with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
See? And so if you're a person who are waiting your turn, and let's say you're chosen, then you steward well. If you're not chosen, then you have a decision to make.
Yeah.
I want to stay and be a part of the team, or am I going to go and explore? And I think both options are available. But I think one of the questions that has to be answered, Gerard, is am I a number two or number one?
Then there's that.
Because a lot of people are great, great assistants. They're not great first chair.
Right.
I mean, because you play second chair violin does not mean you make a good first chair violin. Violinist.
Right.
So I think, and then of course you have to deal with your own ego, your sense of self. You have to deal with your pride.
Yeah.
Do you want to be a part of a winning program? Or is it more important to you to be a part, or to be the leader of a losing program?
Mm-hmm.
So is that, yeah. So, yeah.
I'm laughing because that encompasses so many things and so many people. And to go to something that we've talked about earlier, there are people who have been in positions out of necessity.
Yeah.
And then there are people who have performed well as an assistant, as an itinerant, as a number two, that people automatically think, oh, they'll be a great number one. You
right.
know, you were a great assistant. Sure, you'll be a great coach. You know, it's another wrestling reference. I'll be
no, yeah, come on with it.
But there was a case in the 90s in what was called the Attitude Era, where wrestling was booming. And there was a guy who left the WWE to go to the rival organization, WCW. And he painted himself to be the guy who helped make WWE what it was. He got to WCW, became the number one guy, and the organization literally died in 2 years.
Wow.
Died. And then it was revealed the reason he was so great was because he had the oversight in WWE, as opposed to being the number one guy where all the decisions stopped in WCW. And so I think that's a great example of yeah. how you could, because you have the right oversight and they see where you're good and they also see where to filter certain things
right.
that you end up looking great. But yeah. then when you become the number one guy, not so much.
Right,
you know?
Because the difference between a number one and number two, one is vision, one is mission.
Ooh.
So one can see, that's eyes. Yeah. One can execute, that's hands.
Yes.
Right? Our creativity is different from construction.
Yes.
So you look at, for example, the difference between an architect and a general contractor. Mm-hmm. A design build company means that we have two heads. We have someone that's head of design, we have someone that's head of build, and we get along. Normally design build companies are family businesses.
Right.
Where either the father's the designer, the son is the builder. That's like the Bible says, Abraham was looking for a city whose builder and maker was God. That's a design build situation.
Wow.
The designing part is the vision, is the creativity, is the birthing something out of nothing.
Yeah.
The building part is to have the blueprints and the plan and to know and to have the word speaking. The Bible says that Jesus created everything. He's the word of God, right?
Right. Right.
It came from the Father, but it was executed by the Son.
Yeah.
The word spoke and the Spirit moved. And I think what happens in a situation like this, Gerard, is that a person thinks because they're doing it, because they're executing, I'm the one that's building this. Yeah, but you didn't dream it.
Wow. Wow.
You didn't dream it. And I'm going to tell you, so, and I've seen this, every situation I've ever been in, no one ever brings me in to execute. I've never been in a situation in my life where I came to execute. I always come in and it's like, okay, we need... This is the chaos.
Yeah.
I need creativity. I need you to see something.
Right. Right?
Now, the thing about it is everything, I speak with an accent, but everything I do is going to have an accent.
Yes.
It's going to have my flavor.
Yes.
And it should be like that with every leader. Mm-hmm. A number two or a builder, so to speak, not a designer, builder, normally doesn't have a flavor. And so to speak to the point that you made about the guy going to the WCW,
mm-hmm.
the problem was he could execute.
Yes.
But when it came time for creativity, what's next? He can't tell you what's next. Mm-hmm. Now, what he can do, he can go borrow from that person and borrow from that person. And another thing, too, is whenever there's a crisis mm-hmm. in the organization, especially if the crisis directly affects the key leader.
Yeah.
Key leaders come out of it dreaming. The creativity kicks in. If you're number two trying to function as number one, when something happens that's devastating, you lose sight. And the organization begins to flail and to struggle because you can't see why you're hurting. On one hand, a leader, number one, can see in pain. He could see in a storm.
Yeah.
He can rise. He's an eagle. He can rise above. Even if he's carrying a struggle or pain, he can do that.
Yeah.
Number two guy is waiting on, okay, what are we doing? Tell me, I need to know what we're doing.
Wow.
Okay. And then let's say you're number two, put it in a number one position. Surround yourself with people who can give you counsel.
So good.
All you have to do is decipher which one is, you need the wisdom to know which idea is the best one and that you can push the organization forward. That's a lot of, we covered a lot.
We did. We covered a lot, but it is necessary. It's important. And I really hope that you guys were able to glean from that. And if you're a designer or if you're a builder, they're both necessary.
Yeah.
You know, one is not less than the other. They just have different functions and you may want to make sure that you're in the right function. This is amazing. So
we're talking
incredible, incredible. So we've got to hear from you guys. So make sure you are reaching out to us, of course, on the socials at Heart Ramsey, or you can use the hashtag Heart to Heart or On Course. And this way we will get your comments, your thoughts, your questions. Make sure you're also subscribed to our podcast as well in all of the spaces, Spotify, Apple, Google, all of those places, because you want to make sure that you are listening to this podcast. And those of you who are watching on the Bonafide Media YouTube page, you can check it out there. We may put this in some other places. We'll see. But what we know for sure is we want to make sure that you are connected to what we are doing here. And make sure you join us next time. We're on course with Heart Ramsey.